You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Ahead this hour, Vice President Kamala Harris hosted a roundtable discussion at the White House yesterday on Black maternal health. We turn to Wisconsin experts to explain what contributes to poor outcomes for women of color. How do you improve outcomes for moms and babies? Join in 800-642-1234. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a profile on an art exhibit that celebrates a community's diversity.
A lot of us have felt isolated this past year. And on top of the coronavirus pandemic, a national reckoning on race has forced many of us to consider our own identities, the ways they overlap, and the privileges they afford. WPR's Megan Hart visited an art show in Manitowoc that looks at how these concepts intersect and comes at the perfect time.
On a sunny Saturday in early spring, Sonia Vasquez set up her painting supplies in a bright and airy corner of Manitowoc's Rar West Art Museum. She got to work finishing a portrait of a man, one of 10 she's painting for a show called Portrait of Manitowoc. She usually starts with a photograph.
And then what I do is lay down a layer of paint, and then I sort of take some of that paint off to, like, reveal some of the lighter spots. So it's kind of a give and take sort of thing with the paint at first.
The paintings are small, but they're rich in detail. Each one takes about 6 hours. Vasquez worked with museum curator Diana Bolander to create the exhibit.
So I wanted to try to find a way to marry those two ideas of, you know, classical portraiture and community art, because you just don't see that very often.
Vasquez chose a group of diverse subjects to expertly render. One is Natasha Kahn, a 29-year-old from Two Rivers.
I thought it was amazing. I knew beforehand that she was an amazing artist, but just seeing it was, like, it was so weird at first because you usually don't see yourself like that.
The show is designed to inspire Manitowoc residents to consider how they do see themselves. Dozens of self-portraits are exhibited alongside Vasquez's paintings, displayed between two pieces of glass. On the back, each artist answered a prompt: how do you feel about your identity in relation to Manitowoc? Kahn wrote about struggling to balance her Pakistani heritage with her Wisconsin upbringing.
I think it's just a great way for people to see different representations of our community, and hopefully they can see representations of themselves and realize that their identity and self is important.
Museum goers might see their neighbors or friends among the artworks. The portraits are all different. Vasquez pointed out a work from a 79-year-old artist who signed her portrait as Gloria. She made a collage featuring daffodils, a cardinal, and one of America's most beloved daughters, whose own work often deals with identity, Dolly Parton. The works from students have resonated with Bolander. Many are wearing masks in their self-portraits, documenting this very specific moment in time. And she says it's been powerful to read people's personal descriptions.
And I feel like it's sort of cleansing in a way for some people. And it's been a real mix, like people who maybe have some suggestions on how to make the community better, and also people who really just love it here and want everyone to feel welcome.
Part of the museum is housed in an 1880s home. Bolander says it's literally a mansion on a hill. She knows it's not a place everyone feels comfortable visiting, especially during the pandemic. So the exhibit will travel after it closes at the Rar West on June 6th.
Sonia has designed it so that we'll be able to send it to other locations after it's here. So people who might not feel comfortable coming here to the museum, maybe they'll feel more comfortable going to a local school or the library.
Bolander and Vasquez want the exhibit to be accessible, and they agree representation is important.
I'm super grateful to have a museum and have people that work at the museum that are super open to making their own museum more diverse.
Vasquez is 28 and half Mexican. She says it hasn't always been easy to connect with that side of her culture in Manitowoc, but she sees the community changing.
I think genuinely most people in the city are, you know, are caring, loving people that, you know, want to have a nice community. But I think there's a lot of learning still to be done.
WPR's Megan Hart brought us that story on the art exhibit Portrait of Manitowoc at the Rar West Art Museum. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I'm Maureen McCollum.
And now we're talking about Black mental health, maternal health in Wisconsin, and why Black women nationwide experience unacceptably poor health outcomes in pregnancy. The Biden administration has put forth initial steps to address it. Here's Vice President Kamala Harris presiding over a roundtable of Black maternal health advocates yesterday at the White House.
The United States Congress, leaders at every level, everywhere, must take on this issue. It cannot be for Black women alone to fight for their rights and to fight for their dignity.
Are you a Black woman who gave birth recently? What can you share? How is your new baby doing? How are you? 800-642-1234. Keisha Shanks is a public health and infant mental health consultant. She founded The Mindful Mama, providing case management to pregnant women and women with children under age 7. Keisha, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Good morning.
Good morning. We also have Tiffany Green with us, an assistant professor in the Departments of Public Health Sciences and Obstetrics and Gynecology at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Tiffany, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Well, Tiffany, let's start with you. Wisconsin has the worst record in the nation for Black infant mortality, and maternal mortality for Black mothers is 5 times higher than for white mothers. Why are we seeing these disparities here?
Well, that's a really challenging question, and I think we don't fully know, but we have some ideas. First, I want to say that Wisconsin has long had high Black infant mortality rates, and we've also had high levels of inequality, high levels of Black male incarceration, relatively high levels of unemployment among Black Wisconsinites. The list goes on and on. So those things are necessary for having healthy pregnancies and healthy births and having healthy Wisconsinites in general. So when we have these levels of inequality, we have these levels of structural discrimination, it's not surprising in that sense that we have these problems.
Oh, because one leads to another. It's part of a much more complicated set of situations that you see is driving at this issue. And I think it speaks to Vice President Harris said at yesterday's roundtable, we know why this is happening. And she said systemic racial inequities and implicit bias in healthcare. What do you think?
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, what do you think of that?
I do. I respect the work that Vice President Harris has been doing in this space. I don't know that implicit bias is really key. I do think explicit bias has a lot to do with this. For example, we have racial bias encoded in some of the medical algorithms we use. For example, if I had a C-section and then at the next birth I wanted to have a vaginal birth, I'd be downgraded compared to a white woman simply because I'm Black. I think there's been a lot of focus on implicit bias, and while and we don't have a lot of evidence that these trainings work long term, nor that the key driver of disparities in treatment is implicit bias. So I would encourage us to focus on larger systemic issues in medical training and medical practice as a component of why we are seeing these disparities in outcomes.
Keisha, help us understand Black maternal health through your eyes and through your cases, what you see going on with mothers.
Well, a lot of what I see going on with mothers was really reflected in the same things that Tiffany just spoke of. I see a lot of disparity in the community. There is a lot of external factors outside of the medical care that impact birth outcomes and maternal health outcomes. Things such as food deserts, you know, if you don't have adequate access to healthy foods, those things have an impact on child development and on the overall health of your pregnancy. Access to clean water. Milwaukee is known for having a very well-known lead problem in the water. So you have a number of children that are testing with high levels of lead, which affects cognitive development and brain development. You have a series of housing inequities and a very long history of redlining in the city. So preventing people from accessing equitable housing and safe housing. You have educational inequities. There are a number of systemic barriers within the educational system. You look at the budgets and things like that for the city of Milwaukee, as opposed to other outlying suburban districts, where a lot of the funding is diverted elsewhere. So there's a number of factors in addition to the discrimination and the marginalization that Black mothers experience within healthcare.
Yeah, and so it's really these pillars of society, the food, the access to safe drinking water, the access to safe housing. And so you would really need to optimize all of those things in order to be healthy leading into that pregnancy and then during the pregnancy and afterward. Tiffany, is there a larger continuum here of care?
In terms of, could you clarify what you're saying?
Yeah. I mean, in terms of being able to look at this on a more long-term, a long-term basis, that maternal health isn't just about during the pregnancy or right before and after, that you really have to have these societal pillars in place, if you will, in order to be able to have healthier outcomes.
No, I agree with that. One of my favorite quotes, and I'm blanking on the author at the moment, talks about how programs to improve maternal health outcomes without considering the health of moms are technically unsound and morally illegitimate. And I agree with that, right? We can't start at pregnancy. Many pregnant people don't necessarily plan to get pregnant when they get pregnant, right? And more than that, you know, we know that the roots of these health disparities start in the womb. You know, we know that, for example, in research that women who give birth in low-income neighborhoods are more likely to be low birth weight and give birth to more low birth weight children. And because of that, we need to start early. We need to start with addressing poverty and wealth inequalities. We need to start with addressing the fact that even as children, Black children are discriminated against in medical care, in terms of pain treatment. All of those things need to be addressed far before people get pregnant.
We are discussing the state of Black maternal health in the pandemic, persistent inequities in healthcare in society. Tiffany Green there, she works on this issue in the Department of Population Health Sciences and Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology at UW-Madison. And Keisha Shanks is a public health and infant mental health consultant in Milwaukee. You can join in. If you're a Black woman, how comfortable are you seeking care? And what have conversations been like for you in your OBGYN visits? Did you give birth recently, or are you a doula supporting women in labor? How do you feel about the birthing experience in our state? 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation about Black maternal health. The White House yesterday, it issued a first ever presidential proclamation marking Black Maternal Health Week. It's part of the administration's broader efforts to bring attention to this issue and the racial gaps in pregnancy and childbirth-related deaths. According to data from the CDC, 3 in 5 pregnancy deaths could be prevented. About 700 women die each year from pregnancy complications. And infant mental health consultant Keisha Shanks and Tiffany Green of UW School of Medicine and Public Health, they stay with us for 10 more minutes. Keisha, why might a pregnant mother delay prenatal care or perhaps avoid it altogether or be uncomfortable seeking it?
Well, there's a number of reasons. One might just generally be accessibility. Sometimes it's getting to a doctor's appointments is not an easy feat, especially if you rely on public transportation. And what I'm seeing a lot of with women who are eligible for free transportation through their Badger Care insurance is that a lot of times that transportation is unreliable and it's inconsistent. So a lot of women miss appointments because of that. The other part is that there's a lot of medical abuse that happens at doctor's appointments. I've witnessed it firsthand when I'm at doctor's appointments with my mom. Sometimes doctors can be very, and medical staff can be very dismissive to a mother's concerns, especially if she is a poor Black mother that may not necessarily have the vocabulary to express what it is that she's feeling. There's a lot of assumptions made about the health and well-being and lifestyle of Black women. And this happens across all socioeconomic backgrounds. It's not limited to just poor Black women. So we see a lot of those things. And there's also a cultural disconnect. There are a lot of things that I've had doctors tell pregnant mothers that it's okay if they don't drink water. If they're drinking Coca-Cola, that's fine. Mm. And that's not okay. Mm. You would never tell, a doctor would never tell a white mother that. So in a lot of ways, they encourage unhealthy habits because they believe, well, they're not going to do anything else anyway. So what's the point of me telling them otherwise? And it comes from a historical belief that, that Black people are less educated, less informed, and less civilized, if you will.
Let's bring in a call. Zach joining us from Milwaukee. Hi, Zach. What is your question?
My question is this. The Bayview Compass recently found out that Shorewood had one of the highest radon levels in Wisconsin. Is there any correlation between the fact that radon decomposes into radioactive lead in less than 4 hours? Have these mothers' houses and their forced air systems ever had their filters tested for radon and lead particles? And I'll take my comment off the air.
Zach,
thank you.
Yeah, Zach, thank you. Tiffany, are there any insights on radon exposure in the homes of these women?
Well, that's not my particular area of expertise, and I haven't seen any studies on this this environmental contaminant in particular in Wisconsin, but I think this would be a good area for study for sure.
You know, I want to talk about very high blood pressure. I can tell you as a white woman, preeclampsia is incredibly scary. You know, very high blood pressure, protein, a very high protein in the urine, but you know, it's one of the leading causes of maternal death worldwide. One healthcare report said Black women develop preeclampsia at a rate that is 60% higher than of white women. Tiffany, how can we ensure the medical community is monitoring for blood pressure and, you know, something as basic as making sure blood pressure is under control?
So one thing I suggest in a recent article that we published on bias and obstetrics in the Green Journal is that we can think about standardizing protocols. So rather than leaving it up to just discretion of the provider, we can say, okay, we're going to make sure that we check every birthing person for these issues on a regular basis. We're also going to make sure that birthing people have care beyond, especially the beyond the 60 days that they would get postpartum on Badger Care. There's been policy suggestions, or rather policy implementations, where Wisconsin now has the option of extending Badger Care past that 60 days to 1 year. And, you know, even though preeclampsia often occurs, obviously before and during labor, it can also occur after birth.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
so it's really important to be able to monitor those things. Dr. Kara Hoppe at UW Madison, one of my colleagues, is implementing some programs with the doulas to try to work with Black mothers to monitor their blood pressure. And I think those interventions are really important. But I think on a systemic basis, we need to standardize these protocols and make sure that all birthing people are being regularly checked for these hypertensive disorders of pregnancy.
Keisha, what do you see as the role of doulas to improve the birthing experience for women of color?
Well, as an infant mental health professional, I think the role of doulas is very necessary because it helps provide a sense of belonging, and it helps to reduce anxiety during pregnancy and childbirth for birthing people. Having someone there that can advocate for your behalf and ensure that your needs are met, someone that can essentially be there to support you. What we're seeing a lot of in pregnancy and childbirth is that the focus is on the baby and not so much on the mom as it relates to just the overall health of everyone. More focus is placed on the baby and not so much on the mom, with the exception of things such as high blood pressure or if mom's heart rate drops or things like that. But having someone there that is actually focused on the emotional and mental well-being of mom during that process is paramount. Hmm. It makes a world of difference.
Tiffany, as we close here, can you look around the country for programs or solutions that have worked elsewhere in getting at this issue that we could implement here? Yeah,
absolutely. The California implemented maternal perinatal quality initiatives, and those initiatives have been very successful in narrowing disparities in maternal morbidity. For example, hemorrhaging is one of the most common maternal morbidities, and California experienced disparities in that outcome. However, implementing a standardized protocol across health systems meant that Black women actually disproportionately benefited, and thus disparities in that outcome narrowed. Now, that did not address racial disparities in maternal mortality, which is harder to move, but it does suggest that when thoughtfully implemented, that standardized protocols can really be helpful in narrowing gaps from these outcomes.
Tiffany and Keisha, thank you for joining us.
Thank you
for having me.
Tiffany Green, Assistant Professor in the Departments of Population Health Sciences and Obstetrics and Gynecology at UW-Madison. Keisha Shanks is a public health and infant mental health consultant. Tonight's episode of PBS Wisconsin's digital series focuses on this issue at 7, and this is the Ideas Network.